You're listening to What It's Like with Luce, a podcast highlighting ordinary people doing extraordinary things. I'm your host, Lucy Norris, and on today's episode, I'm chatting to founder of My Tennis Events, who also happens to be an ex-apprentice candidate. Sitting in front of her TV at age 9, this week's guest can remember being mesmerized by Lord Sugar's boardroom from the moment she saw it. Taking her first steps into the world of business at just 14, she has since built herself up quite the career. Making it to the final 5 of The Apprentice wasn't the first time she'd experienced success, as prior to becoming a household name, she had escalated her tennis events company to become the leading player in its field. Solving issues with shopping during COVID via her new online ordering platform Shopping Slot and lending a hand to budding entrepreneurs through a new coaching scheme, there's little this individual can't do. Sharing her story of how she did it, here's what it's like to be Sabrina Stalker. Before we get stuck into the episode, I just wanted to say that if there is a drop in sound quality throughout, I'm very sorry, but in respect of social distancing during COVID-19, I've had to record episodes remotely. In this challenging time, we're all trying our best, so I really hope everyone is staying safe and that you enjoy the episode. Welcome, Sabrina. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me today. I really appreciate it. I think it would be a really interesting starting point if we go all the way back to the very beginning of everything and chat a little bit about your experience growing up and maybe where tennis fit into that, because I know it was kind of the foundation blocks of everything that you've done so far.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me. Firstly, I'm excited to be here. Going back, that sounds, it makes me feel old. I know. Going back to my teenage years. So I started as a tennis player when I was 7 years old, and I just absolutely loved the sport. I started coaching when I was 14, and at the very, very beginning, when I was 15 years old, I made my boss like $8,000 in a week, and he paid me £150. And I was like, oh my goodness, this isn't okay. Like, I need to learn how to do this myself. And that's actually how I started my tennis events company, by being annoyed as an employee, or, well, a 15-year-old employee, but, you know.
Yeah, but that's so amazing that you even had that awareness at that age to realize you were being underpaid, because I think, you know, a lot of us might not have even thought of that. So touching on that a little bit, I know there's a little bit of a story, you know, you started your own company at 14. So can we explore that entrepreneurial side of you as well a little bit, if you want to take me back to that time?
Sure. Well, I guess I first learned about business through The Apprentice. I think this was like 2009 or something, the first series. Oh, no, I was 9 years old. So it'd be like 2006, 2004. But I was 9 years old. I remember watching The Apprentice, and I was like, oh my goodness, what are these people doing? This is easy. Why can they not do it? I understand now that it's a lot harder than it seems. But I didn't know anything about business until The Apprentice. And at 14 years old, I got an opportunity with Young Enterprise to create my own business. And we were like 2 years younger than everyone else because we were a brand new school. And I just absolutely loved it. And we won loads of awards, and I was thinking, I really have a flair for this. I really enjoy it. That's kind of my first insight to the business world.
That's crazy. I love how you can connect, you know, The Apprentice as something that, I guess, ignited your interest in business to then you appearing on it. That must be crazy to think, you know, I guess it's that thing, I don't know, like subconscious manifestation or whatever, but it's pretty cool to be able to say you ended up being on the show that started everything for you. But outside of that, because you've done so much before the show that I think a lot of people didn't know about, you know, you had a company that was leading its field before you even went on. So yeah, I'd be interested to know how you went about setting that up.
I think for me, you know, I've had my life outside The Apprentice and before The Apprentice was pretty mental. My tennis events company was already the biggest in the UK prior to the show, which is really exciting. Yeah. I also had traveled a lot. So I'd been doing a lot of different things. And for me, it was about, okay, I loved my job as a tennis coach, and I was getting paid well. I was getting paid £40 an hour. Now, when you're 19, earning £40 an hour, you think you are loaded.
Because you are at that time. Like, I had no money at 19. I was a uni student broke. Like, that's amazing that you could do that for yourself. I really admire that.
Yeah, but the negative thing was I was spending so much money. Like, I just didn't have a concept of money because it came so easily to me. And when you're earning, you know, that amount of money at a reasonably young age, you learn very quickly. And I thought, okay, I'm earning £40 an hour. This is great, but I want more. And how am I going to get more than £40 an hour? Well, that means that I have to do something that doesn't require me to physically be there, because there's only a certain amount of hours that I can work a week. And that's when I started thinking, okay, what can I do that's utilizing my skill set, which is tennis? And I love the idea of running an events company. So I was like, hey, what if I ran tennis events? And that's how my tennis event started.
That's really cool, because I did think, you know, when I watched you on The Apprentice, which is kind of weird that I'm talking to you now. But when I heard about your company, you know, tennis events, it's such a unique angle to go into that industry, because I guess the most obvious thing is to go into coaching if you are a player yourself. So to have found that niche in a way, or a backdoor into a lucrative area of the industry, is really cool that you could do that. So were you doing that alongside university, or did you go to university, or how did it kind of translate into your adult life?
Sure. Well, I went to the US to do a tennis scholarship there for 6 months, which was amazing. Oh, and yeah. I came back to the UK and I thought, okay, I love tennis coaching. But I also was such an academic at school. So I thought, I don't want to not do a degree or a master's or something. So I actually found a loophole in the admin system to my university and went straight into my MBA. So I started...
As you do.
So I started studying my MBA at the same time as I was tennis coaching. So it was like running a full-time job, doing an MBA, and also trying to start a business. And my life was pretty hectic at a young age, I'd say.
Yeah, so at this point, I think I would have dropped dead. So how did you, one, keep yourself alive, but also, I guess, like, you know, a lot of people struggle with early onset burnout and that kind of thing, because we're all so obsessed with this chasing success and chasing huge figures before we're 25 and all this kind of thing, and that mindset that's floating around. I don't know if it's because of social media or what, but how did you make sure that you didn't burn out whilst doing so much at once?
Yeah, I mean, burnout is such a real thing. Like, I've definitely gone through burnout a few times, and you just get to this place that you're like exhausted, and all of the things you're doing, you can't see the end line. I think for me, I've just learned how to prioritize very, very well, because I'm like, okay, what has to get done today? And I focus on what has to get done and what makes me move to the next level. Whereas it took me a while to learn that. Before, I tried to do everything, and as soon as I tried doing everything, I had no time to myself. So I think learning to prioritize is such a key, but also outsourcing. Like, I have a team around me that helped me get to where I am, and if it wasn't for them, there's no way I could fit everything in. So I think it's about finding out what your skill set is as well. And even if you're outsourcing via Upwork or Fiverr, something where you're not paying a full rate, that's such a great stepping stone to being able to outsource things that you're not very good at.
And so you're doing all this crazy stuff, you're keeping yourself afloat miraculously, and then you get to this place where your company is the number one company for tennis events in the UK. How do you think you built your brand to that point? Is there a secret to it, or how did you do it?
I think for me, like, I was so focused. I came back from traveling, and another lady who was a mum, she was one of my clients, she started a competitor company down the road from me. And I got so angry. I was like, I have just helped you for the last 6 months and you are going to go do this. And a fire just erupted inside of me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to be massive. And within 6 months, I was the biggest events company. And I actually overexpanded because I didn't have enough staff at that time to run all the events. I think, you know, if you want to push yourself and get to the next level, you have to be 100% focused. And I was saying no to going out with my friends. I was saying, you know, no, but not because I felt like I had to work. I just enjoyed it. And I think the reason why people say you've got to be passionate about something isn't because, yes, it is about you loving it, but it's more about, it's such hard work and dedication to get you to the next level that you have to love it. Otherwise, you'll just lose the motivation.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And it is that saying, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life, or something like that. And
rubbish, by the way. That's absolute rubbish. Like, you will work. Running a business is hard work. And anyone who says that you can get rich quick or that running a business is easy, like, just discard them out of your life. It's not easy. But you have to love what you do as well.
Yeah, no, it is so true. And I think that's the key to everything. But the other thing I'd be interested to ask you is, how did you find, so, you know, you found yourself sitting on top of a massively successful company, which I can imagine in the tennis world, the people that get to your level, you know, are maybe like in their 50s, or I can imagine them being, you know, males. So how did you find it being a young, successful female in business? Did you ever encounter some really hard roadblocks in getting people to take you seriously?
Yeah, 100%, you know, like a lot of the tennis world is dominated by middle-aged men or older. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just means that it's dominated by that. So when you've got a young, blonde female coming in, it does spice things up. And I think I've learned how to use it to my advantage because it gets me indoors. So I can easily start a conversation with people because a woman in the tennis world is quite rare. But when I actually produced results, that's when people started taking me seriously. So when I was like, okay, this is what we can do for your company, this is what your revenue streams are going to be like, that's when I was listened to. So it was definitely, you know, a big thing for me to open doors, but I had to use that slight disadvantage to my advantage. But also with that, you know, I had these massive limiting beliefs and I still am trying to tackle them. The fact that I'm 25 years old and I'm a bubbly blonde, like for me, I don't feel like people will take me seriously and I haven't got enough experience, but I know that's a limiting belief because I have been able to prove the results that I can say I can do. So I definitely think if you are young, there's this massive thing on you saying, you know, you're too young to be doing this, but that's all in your head. And if anyone ever says that you're too young to be doing something, then they're not the right people to be hanging around with.
Yeah, it's so true. Mindset is everything. And I've been watching you a lot on your Instagram at the moment. I love all the stuff you're doing about like your limiting beliefs and how you thought you'd never be a 7 a.m. person. And now you're doing it. It's so inspiring. So I'm like, I'm going to get up at 7 a.m. But so at this point, I guess, you know, you maybe have achieved all of your goals that you'd kind of set in that short space of time. And you were doing so well. So why did you feel that you wanted to take your business onto The Apprentice?
I was such an Apprentice fan. Like, it was the first glimpse I ever had of business. And I really wanted to put myself through the challenge. And looking back, like, I had the best experience, but I am so glad I didn't win. Because as much as I love tennis, you know, I've done tennis in a sense. And I will always keep my tennis company, but I want to do more things. So this is, you know, not winning has given me the opportunity to do more things, but also have all of the positive PR out of it. But ultimately, I just wanted the challenge and I was really excited to meet Karen and Claude.
There's a million and one questions that I could ask you about that. But if we could just briefly touch on what that experience was like in a nutshell and also how it impacted on all of your next steps.
Sure. So The Apprentice for me was completely surreal. I still hadn't believed I was on the show, even though when I was competing. And I think, you know, it's definitely taught me that business is all about adapting and being able to problem solve. Because every single day we were chucked a new challenge, and when things were going right and when you're doing a good job, something mysteriously goes wrong because they have to make good TV.
Yes. Oh, I wonder how that happened.
Honestly, so we were at the Expo Center in Birmingham, and I just qualified as a PT, and I was having to sell this PT equipment. And I was like, okay, guys, I've got this. I get onto stage and there's no equipment. I was like, are you kidding me? How am I meant to sell gym equipment without the gym equipment here? So I was like having to demo the battle ropes with my hands. And I got random people from the audience to do a press-up challenge. It was so fun. But, you know, The Apprentice for me was a series of challenges every single day, but it was also emotionally very draining because you're away from your family and friends. You can't have phone or music. you're just completely secluded. So I felt like I've done COVID isolation in the apprentice house already.
That's crazy. I don't think anyone would have ever, well, because obviously we don't see any of that. I didn't know that you weren't allowed your phones or anything. Did you ever, I guess, worry before you went on that doing something like The Apprentice, as much as it's such a loved show and it is respected, but it's still reality TV, I guess. So did you ever worry that all of the credibility and, you know, the strong branding that you'd built on your own behind your business would be potentially negatively affected by the fact that it was a reality TV show and, you know, open to such, because those interviews at the end, like, they rip into you even if there's nothing to rip into. So did you ever worry maybe, like, God, I might come out of this with not a business anymore because they've been so mean to me or anything like that?
Yeah, so I didn't really think of that when the show was actually being filmed, but before episodes has come out, I would stress. I'd be like, oh my God, you do not want to see this episode. I just started shouting at my team and they didn't show it. And I was like, thank goodness. They didn't show that. I think, like, the disappointing thing about the show, the only thing I'd say is, like, the interview stage, because it asked me a question and I'd give my answer and they'd just keep asking me the question until I said no. So I feel like the interviews were completely fake for me. And that was a bit disappointing, really, because I'd have actually liked to talk to someone about my business rather than them just
the
trying to be
going on the program. Yeah,
exactly. But apart from that, you know, I think I came really positively out of The Apprentice. And the best thing is when I watch back the episodes, I say something to the team and they don't listen to me. And when I was filming it, I was like, I didn't realize they weren't listening to me, but watching the show, they just weren't listening to me. And 20 minutes later, Karen says that they should have done the thing that I said. And I'm there like, yes.
No, I loved it. That season that you were on was so, so good as well. I remember we were watching it like in my uni halls. Every time The Apprentice was on, we would all go in the room and we'd have dinner and watch The Apprentice. We're obsessed. But when you left, I guess your world turned upside down in the sense that now the media knew who you were for reasons other than just, you know, your business. So how did you harness that to positively impact on your next steps in business?
Yeah, I mean, it was insane. Like, there's 8 million people a week who watch the show. And I just got recognized everywhere. And there was once I was on a train and a girl asked me to take a selfie, and then I was at a hotel later in the day and the dad goes, my daughter just took a selfie with you, can you take one with me too? So it was like a bit crazy, but everyone was so lovely when I did meet them, although I stopped taking public transport because everyone would just start talking to me. So
yeah, that must have been much after a while, like, I just want to take my train.
You do not want to see my Uber bill. My Uber bill could have, like, bought a new car. It's ridiculous. I think for me, I made the most out of the show because I thought, I've got one shot to make it big. And during the show, they asked us not to be big on PR, which is different to last year. But I didn't really make the most out of actually when the show was on. It was more after the show that I started building my following, that I started working on my personal brand. And I just was really open to opportunities and also was really proactive. So I was thinking, what are other people doing that's made them stand out? What do I want to be known for and how do I get there? So it was quite strategic as well.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think touching on that personal brand aspect, you've really done, I think, a really nice job of curating that personal brand. And it seems like you have a very clear mission of where you want to go with it, which is really cool to see. You know, sometimes I guess people can get overwhelmed, like, I couldn't even begin to imagine the fame like afterwards, but I'd say it can be quite overwhelming and then you might get a bit scattered with, you know, so many opportunities flying at you all the time. But so coming back to the present moment and what you're doing now, you're working on Shopping Slot, is that right?
Yeah, so my last couple of months in lockdown have been crazy. Like, there's no way I could have predicted, well, I could have predicted it in the sense that my life always seems to be turned upside down. But my tennis company overnight stopped. Like, I lost out, you know, tens of thousands of pounds already just from tennis events, which was really frustrating because I was going to have a really good year. I was going to have my best year yet. And I thought, okay, well, that's not happened. What else can I do? And I get asked all of the time to start businesses with people. And Jason was one of those people who says, I've got this website called Shopping Slot. I want to expand it. Will you come on board and we'll, you know, be partners? And I ignored it. I was like, oh, it's just another website. I don't want to look into this. And it was a couple of weeks later and I really needed a shopping delivery because I was isolating. And I remembered that Jason had messaged me and I spent like half an hour just going through messages, trying to find this one message. And I joined, I rang him up. We spoke on the phone for a couple of hours. We set up the company over the phone. Bear in mind, I'd never met him. And when I joined the company on the 7th of April, we had like 2,000 to 3,000 page views. And within a week, I got it into regional press. I got it into national press. And we hit over 100,000 page views. And we've now hit 3 million page views. And that's about 6 weeks. So it's been insane.
Tell me your secrets. Tell me how I get those numbers on my podcast. That's amazing. I think that's just testament to all of the hard work, though, that we've heard over the course of this conversation. You know, it's not just starting from the day you stepped into Alan Sugar's boardroom. It started at 14 when you were, you know, hustling your way through life. So that's absolutely incredible. And the other thing I've noticed you're doing, and I think you're launching at the moment, is your business coaching.
Yeah, so it's been really exciting, actually. I've done quite a lot of business coaching before, but it's always been in person rather than online. And obviously, I can't do it in person at the moment.
Yeah.
So you can actually apply at sabrinasucker.com/mentorship. And it's a place where if you want to get involved or start up a business, that you can actually come. Because when I first started a business, there was so much that I didn't understand. And it's so complicated. And running a business doesn't have to be complicated. I always say, like, KISS, keep it simple, stupid, or sexy, depending on how you're looking at it. But like, I just want it to be easier for other people to start their own business. And I think it's a mix of, one, having the resources of knowing how to do that. And secondly, somewhere that you have got these limited beliefs that you can talk openly about that. And that's really exciting. And I put out like a chat with Sabrina where I'm just going to go live for like 10 minutes with different individuals. And I put it out for 24 hours and I was booked until middle of July. Like, there was so much demand for it. So I'm really excited to be doing and trying to help other people feel like they have what it takes to start a business.
That's really exciting. And I think that's really nice as well that you're at a stage where, and also like, can everyone just please remember you're 25 years old?
And 24, they take me a year.
Oh, you're 24. Sorry, I thought you said you were 25. Sorry, that was my
I might have said I was 25.
I think
maybe I did.
Anyways, 24.
I'm adding months onto my life, obviously.
Yeah, don't waste your life away. But yeah, and I love that already. Your thought process, you know, is how can you give back to your online community? It's so nice. So if you could look into the future, even I guess past this pandemic into 2021, when hopefully the world will be back to normal, at least a little bit, what would you like to see going on for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I used to listen to Tony Robbins, Brendan Burchard, like, you know, big role models when I was like 14, 13, 14, 15. And I used to listen to them every single night. And I look back and I wonder, why were there no, you know, middle-aged 20-year-olds or young females doing it? Why is this motivational online space dominated by middle-aged men? It doesn't make sense. Like, I want someone who's relatable, and 14-year-old me should have had, you know, a young female to look up to rather than as amazing as he is, someone like Tony Robbins or Brendan Burchard, because there wasn't another choice and I didn't really find there's another choice. So if I could be a voice to, you know, anyone, well, even older than me, but anyone who's looking to start a business that is potentially having that female side of them, that empowerment side, that would be amazing. Yeah.
Do you have a personal definition of what success would mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot recently. Success means I am going to bed every single day feeling that I'm happy with how my day's gone and that I'm waking up and I'm excited to start that day.
Yeah, that's really powerful. I think if we could all, you know, get to that point, it sounds so simple, but actually when you really stop and think, if you're in that state, the amount of people that would get a bit of a reality hit in realizing that they're not, you know, mm-hmm. is crazy. And then my last and final question for you, because I know you have to run off. if I put your 10-year-old self in front of you today, having been through everything you've been through, what's the biggest piece of advice you'd give your 10-year-old self moving forward in life?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I would say do things bolder, younger. Like, it took me until, you know, 21 really to start scaling my company. Like, I had a company, but I hadn't scaled it. And actually, I had the ability to do that when I was, you know, 16, 17. So I'd say make bigger moves faster.
I love that. Well, thank you so, so much, Sabrina, for giving up your evening to speak to me and share some of your insight and your stories. It's been so inspiring. And yeah, I think a lot of people will be so interested, you know, to hear the person behind The Apprentice as well, because there is so much going on for you that, you know, I think people don't give you enough credit for. So thank you so much again. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, and as always, please rate, share, and leave a comment if you like what you hear. And don't forget to follow at What It's Like Pod on Instagram and Facebook. For more information on Sabrina and her businesses, visit the links in the show notes provided. I'll be back next week with more inspiring stories, but for now, this has been What It's Like with Luce.